Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here today with Christy Duvall. Christy is a leadership coach, speaker, and author of an upcoming book called Teaching Myself to Jump. Early in her career, she set out to move into management and leadership, identifying gaps, creating opportunities, and stepping into leadership with intention, where she discovered a deep passion for developing others. She has over a decade of experience leading teams and driving transformation. Her work is shaped by her own journey of questioning traditional success, learning to trust herself, and building a coaching practice that helps women leaders lead through growth and acquisition without burning out. So welcome, Christy.
Thank you, Karen. I'm super excited to be here today.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So let's talk a little bit about how you started out. Did you start out in corporate, or was that always your thing? Or
well, I guess if no, I did not start out in corporate. I fell into sales sort of by mistake. I actually went to college for accounting. So I went to college for accounting, and then after two semesters, I realized this isn't for me. And I packed a couple of suitcases. I got on a plane and I moved to Idaho from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I worked in hospitality, and then I moved around the Northwest. I moved to Portland, and then ultimately ended up in Seattle. And I worked in corporate relocation for a while, and then I saw an ad in the paper back before there were job boards, and it was a job to sell packaging. And I thought, how hard could that be? That started my journey into packaging and corporate roles, starting out in sales and advancing up into management.
Cool. So why Idaho? I have to ask.
Well, I had failed out of college. I was the person who had good grades in high school. I was super active in lots of activities, but I think when it came to college, I wasn't really unsure. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I just thought, oh, well, my mom makes a good living as an accountant. Maybe I'll just go do that. And when I got to college, I think I just was not prepared for all of the social challenges. I think I was probably a little more sheltered than I realized. And so after I had to move back home from college, that was really hard.
Yeah.
And I think I was searching for something. And I worked at a ski shop, and I was helping these ladies who lunch pick out their tennis outfits for summer and their ski outfits for the wintertime. And they would talk about going out to the Rockies and skiing. And they were just describing this like après life and, you know, sipping hot cocoa by the fire. And I thought, wow, that sounds really fun. And so I ended up finding this book called Summer Jobs. And this is back in the 90s. And I applied for two jobs. One was in California. One was in Idaho. And when Idaho called me and said, yeah, room and board is included with your employment, I was like, I'm going. And yes, everybody in my family said, why would you go to Idaho? There's nothing but potatoes. Idaho is full of just natural beauty, the Sawtooth Mountains, the Northern Rockies. I mean, I got exposure to hiking and being outdoors, and I totally was not into that when I grew up in Pittsburgh. And so that's kind of what happened.
And I mean, I don't know a thing about Idaho. I would have said that potato comment myself, but sounds like it's like a hidden gem, which is really fun.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The town that I went to is called Stanley, Idaho. And back in the mid 90s, the population was 71. So my dating options as a 21-year-old were pretty limited. But, you know, most people go there to river raft and do summer recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody goes there in the wintertime. You cross-country ski to get anywhere. The town is a lot bigger now. It's not gigantic, but it's a lot bigger than it was back then. But yeah, everybody knew everybody. And I worked at a resort. So I got to, it was sort of like my college experience. I think what I imagined college would be like. I mean, I lived in a wood hut with my sleeping bag and my roommate who ended up being from Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And it was heaven because it was independence for me for the first time.
Right.
But yeah, the outdoor recreation, the hiking, the rafting, the hot springs.
Because you were a city girl.
Yeah. I mean, I was a suburban kid growing up in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And I worked downtown Pittsburgh, before I moved and all of that.
Yeah. I had a similar experience growing up in Kansas City and moving to Boulder. Yeah.
Oh,
very
yeah.
similar.
Yeah.
So what was the transition when you moved out of this resort job? Was
so
there
I
a
had,
moment, or was it just like the term was up and I got to find something else to do?
well, you know, after my first summer there, I had to move home because I spent all of the money that I made.
Having
You know,
fun.
I didn't know how to manage money when I was in my 20s. And so I had to move back home. And after you get that sense of independence and you move out on your own, going back home, and it really has nothing to do with your parents or your home life. It's just you are so used to a level of independence that you kind of can't let go of. So I had to move back home. And then I went back out to I went back out to Idaho and Montana. I ski bummed for a while. And I think at some point my mom said, you know, you need to get a real job. You can't do this forever. So I know people that do actually. Yeah. Now, you know, now that I'm in my 50s, yes, I know plenty of people that, you know, have done that, have been content. But I think my mom, there was probably a conversation where she just, I remember her saying, you can't do this forever. You need to get a real job. And I just thought, okay. So I ended up moving to Boise and I found a job as a sales assistant. And I basically ran errands for salespeople. And I sort of fell into sales by mistake, but that was where I got my first, like, I guess you could say real job. I was signing leases for apartments and doing corporate relocation for these sales reps. You know, I moved up. I started out as an assistant and then they asked me, hey, do you want to become a salesperson? And we have an opportunity in Portland, Oregon. So I thought, okay. And my mom said, you should never pass up an opportunity to get promoted. And so I said, okay. So I moved to Portland.
And how old were you when you, how old were you when you did this move?
Let's see. I would have been 23. Yeah, I was probably 23 when I moved from Boise to Portland.
And this was in the 90s still?
Yeah, the mid-90s.
So just so people know, if you're younger, back in the days, there weren't cell phones. So when you moved, you had to change your phone number and nobody could find you.
That's right.
Yeah. So
I don't even know if we had email. Like, I mean, I can't even remember.
Yeah. That was just when email was starting up. But yeah, that's a big, big deal to move to another part of the country as a single person, of a job when you're 23 at that, in that era.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was living in Idaho, when I first got there that first year, I had to go to the payphone like once a week and call my mom and just tell her what was going on.
Yeah, such a different era, isn't it? I can look on my phone and see if my daughter's at home or at work.
Right.
So I can call her.
Well, yeah, I can see when somebody like last checked their messages or whatever. I'm like, okay, they're good. That's my way of checking in sometimes.
Totally. Yeah. The most passive check-in ever. But yeah, totally different world. So what was it like to land in Portland as like a new person, you know, and you hadn't done, had you already done sales or you were moving to Portland to do sales?
I was moving from being an assistant to being a full-time salesperson. So I kind of knew what it took. I had there was a woman who mentored me who was one of the salespeople, and I got really close to her. Even after I moved to Portland, I'd go back and visit all the time, visit her and her husband. And I mean, I was in my 20s and she was probably in her 50s. And she just like, mentored me and she took me under her wing, and that's where I learned a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're in the thick of it. You're doing your sales. So you ended up just transitioning to management, right?
Well, not from that job. So that role, then they gave me an opportunity to move to Seattle. And Seattle is always where I wanted to move. Like once I set out to leave Pittsburgh, you know, there was that early 90s movies. There was Say Anything. There was Singles and sort of glorified Seattle and the grunge music scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the choice to move to Seattle. So I took that. And then I worked at the company for a couple of years. And, you know, the owners were older, didn't look like the kids weren't working in the business. And I just thought, I don't know how long this company is going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw an ad in the paper for packaging sales. And like I said, how hard could that be? So I went and worked at a packaging company for about 6 years. And then I went to work at a competitor. And that competitor, the last company I've worked at, I worked there for 20 years. And that's where I got into management.
Let's talk about when did you decide to break out and start coaching instead of just staying in the forever management track?
Yeah. I became a sales manager. And then after 3 years of doing that, I hired a coach. So when I wanted to move into management, I hired a leadership coach or an executive coach. And, you know, I've had multiple coaches over the years, but I had a coach guide me because I didn't trust myself, right? I was waiting for somebody else to tell me, oh, you're ready. I still believed for some reason that, you know, getting tapped on the shoulder for a promotion is the way it worked. And that coach taught me, no, you can't wait for somebody else, but you do need to recognize where your blind spots are. And there was a coach at one point when after I'd been a sales manager, I changed coaches and I went to a woman who she was a referral and she taught me how to be a leader. So I learned how to become a manager, but you know, management and leadership are not the same. And I'm still surprised today how many people think those terms are interchangeable. But I hired an executive coach. I worked with her probably for 7 years. And the biggest thing I got from working with her is I needed to trust myself. I didn't need anybody else to tell me I was ready or I was good enough. I struggled with imposter syndrome, even after I had the big title, even after I became the vice president of sales, I still kept thinking they're going to find out I'm a fraud. But the coach helped me work through that. And then I think, you know, I was accustomed to getting promoted every three-ish years. And so after the three-year mark, I was asking my boss, what's next for me? What's next? And, you know, we had talked about what the future might look like. And, you know, but that I could take on more responsibility. There was a couple of years into my VP of sales role. And he said, hey, you know, I think that, you know, there's definitely an opportunity for you to move up at some point. Let's start talking about what that looks like, what sort of skills you need to gain. And I waited 3 years after that conversation. I kept asking for more responsibility, but after a long enough waiting, I decided I can't wait for somebody else to tell me. I think it's time for me to think about my long-term plan, which was to become a leadership coach and start my own practice. And it was more of a 10-year plan. And my coach that I still worked with, she said, don't make it a 10-year plan, make it a 5-year plan. And it's one of the best pieces of advice I've ever received because I'm just past the 2-year mark. And to her point, she said, a lot of people will wait, they'll wait 9 years to start their 10-year plan. And she said, now being 2 years into starting my own business, I totally understand what she means because it takes a lot of early mornings, late nights. I've struggled to I've struggled to prioritize myself while I'm building the business. And best advice.
Yeah. You made it like a really good point there. And how common do you think it is? Do you think it's more common for women? This is a rhetorical question, by the way. Do you think it's more common for women than men to feel like they need permission to, you know, make a big decision like that or to step into, you know, a new career or a new role? And what would you say about that? Because obviously I think I know the answer.
Yes. We're waiting more often than not. We think we need another certification, another class. If I had this, you know, certificate, then somebody else will tell me that I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I think over the last 3 years in particular, as I've worked so much on myself, equally at the same time as building my business, I can't wait for somebody else. Yeah. And I don't think most men are waiting for somebody else. You know, thinking about writing my book, just as an example, and I kept thinking, well, I'm not really an author. I haven't published anything. I mean, I write blogs, but I don't have a publisher. I don't even know how I'm going to release it. And somebody said, you know, if you were a man, you would have already promoted this on LinkedIn and told the whole world that you're writing a book and it's forthcoming. And I just went, really? So it was just, you know, these aha moments for me. And yes, I think lots of women are in that boat and we should not wait.
Yeah. I've, I saw a talk by somebody who was talking about, she was talking with women, I don't know, business people about the art of negotiation. And she talked about how, again, like where men assume competency and women assume that they have to prove themselves. It was really fascinating. And it just brings me back to this, like, it's such a great saying. If you're a middle-aged white man, do not be offended. But the comment is, do everything with the audacity of a middle-aged white man, right? Who assumes
that they belong.
Isn't it?
It's a great line. Yeah. If we could just remember that when we're in the moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When we're in that moment of, oh, I don't know. I mean, even this week I had, you know, I had a moment with myself where I was like, oh, what am I doing? I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't have enough experience for this. And then, you know, within 4 hours, I had worked through, you know, went out. I gave myself some space. I'm like, no, no, right. No, I am good enough. Yes. And to your point, maybe now I'll start thinking about that line.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. It's a vibe. You can lean into it and remind yourself.
It's one of those,
needs to be on a piece of jewelry or something. Like, oh,
it's a vibe. I love that.
So you said something earlier about the difference between management and leadership. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think management is about like managing tasks and being directive and, you know, telling people what to do. And at least I think leadership, it's important to lead by example. And you got to lead yourself before you can lead other people. A lot of managers haven't done the inner work. And I think back to people I've met and coached over the years, even in my corporate role, I did a lot of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember meeting with somebody and he said, well, I really want to be, you know, in charge of the plant or whatever, because I worked in manufacturing. And he tended to do a lot of firefighting, like as the manager. And I said, how are you developing your team to handle these issues so you can really lead? And, you know, that's just an example of, that's my whole premise is you can set expectations, you can do all sorts of things as a leader, but you've got to do the inner work. And there's a lot more work for a leader to do. And I think the best leaders are constantly learning, constantly improving on themselves, because your team will recognize that too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from my years in small business, I really think that, you know, it's the fast, intense track to self-development, right? I think people who don't have their own business or who are not in leadership, they can like, you know, self-development is fun. Uh-huh. It's like a hobby, like, oh, I go to yoga twice a week, right? But when you're present in a different kind of way, I think it naturally just leads you into seeing the value in that kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, even this week, I was, you know, talking to somebody and, you know, I've had to lead through lots of growth in the company I worked at and post-acquisition integration, which is incredibly painful. Anybody who's done it knows. And, you know, I've struggled with burnout over the years many times, partly because I've always been so committed to professional pursuits. And anyway, when I was post-acquisition and I was really struggling, I wasn't the best leader for my team, you know, because I was carrying lots of emotional labor. I was carrying it home at night. And I was never giving myself a break. But I was talking to somebody recently, and he said, I noticed a big change in you at some point. And he said, I don't know what it was, but we were talking about his emotions, because I said, your emotions are affecting everybody around you. And we talked a lot about what were the things he could do, you know, and I asked him questions like, what were the things that I did as a leader that made an impact on you? Because I was trying to get him to recognize, if he could recognize what he saw in other people, what could he do for himself? And I think that's what great leaders do, is they do lots of inner reflection, but they also help other people take that same perspective on themselves.
Yeah. And also when you're interacting with people like that as a leader, it's there are subtle levels of communication that are going on. It's not just, I wrote this down and that's what I mean, right?
Oh, yeah. And yeah. I mean, your body language, your everything. I mean, when I think about when I was younger, and I would say I was probably more of a manager, I was trying to prove myself. I was not approachable. And there was this one time where I was at this company event and two reps were talking to somebody else and they were talking about me. And I interrupted and I said, I'm sorry, what did you guys just say? And they're like, I said, it's okay. You can say it. It's an after hours work event. Uh-huh. And they said, you don't listen to us. You are always unapproachable. And I just was completely unaware. I was blissfully unaware.
Yeah.
And they said, well, when we come in to tell you about something exciting, your first thing is, okay, but what about this other thing you were working on? Like, I was not listening. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing. Great. You know, really good leaders will listen. You got to meet people where they are.
Yeah. And every interaction is a conversation, right?
Every interaction, nonverbal or verbal.
Yeah. Yeah. I took this amazing workshop many, many years ago. It was this modality called Hakomi. It's not really that common. But one of the things we did is we broke it down into like groups of like four or five. Mm-hmm. We didn't say anything. We didn't know each other. And we just take a minute, like take 30 seconds or 1 minute, and everybody in the group, just look at this one person. And then we want you to say what you think is going on with that person. And it was amazing.
Wow.
It was amazing. We have this idea that we are this little distinct box that is separate from everything else around us. It is complete bullshit. People know. People know if you're faking it at work, you know?
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an amazing experience. So I don't know if you kind of went over this, but what did coaching give you that you couldn't get through basically your corporate world alone? Or was that just like the next step in your development?
Yeah, the company I worked at was it was a mid-sized business, but that didn't spend a lot of money on employee development. And I was always looking for my next, when I started, I was always looking for my next certificate to prove I was ready for something. But then I once I started working with a coach and when I started working with my last coach, she's the one I worked with the longest. When I started working with her, I thought she was going to give me the answers, right? I thought I was going to go to her and say, okay, I want to move up into, you know, executive leadership role. What do I need to do?
I'm paying you for the answers. Okay.
Right. I'm paying you for the answers.
Mm-hmm.
It was so, I think back when I started working with her, it was so uncomfortable. Because she would always turn the question back on me. And I always felt so unprepared for those meetings with her. But the biggest thing I took away from working with a coach is I learned to trust myself. That's the number one thing. And that, you know, that doesn't mean I don't have or didn't have imposter syndrome along the way. But I learned some, she gave me tools to be able to manage the emotions that came with when I questioned myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the self-trust was number one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's going through my head is, what is it? Simple things are easy. Easy things are simple, but simple things are not easy. Right.
So,
when you talk about learning to trust yourself, it seems like you should be able to read a book or do a 5-minute exercise and have that down, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wish it was as easy as, you know, yeah, I wish it was as easy as reading a book and having the answers. But, you know, I think we consume so much information, whether you read books, listen to podcasts, scroll social, it's then how do you apply that to yourself? What do you do with that information? Because we can consume all of it. And I mean, I see people that say, oh, I read 2 or 3 books a month. I'm like, how do you even apply all of that? And I think it comes down to how are you applying what you learn, whether it's to develop yourself or the people around you.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes I think, talking about the 90s and how simple things were back then too, you know, and how, you know, that could be frustrating. But at the same time, I think the proliferation of information and data and news and videos and stuff that we have, I think that really undermines our self-confidence because we see so many competing opinions. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all for critical thought. But at the same time, just considering so many things, I think can really destabilize a person.
Yeah. I mean, we are in this era of, you know, it's tough to connect with people. I mean, one of my personal goals for this year is to have more, whether it's in person or Zoom chats or whatever, is to have at least two conversations with people a week that I either haven't spoken to in over a year, or maybe they're a LinkedIn connection and I don't even know who they are, but I've been doing some cold outreach and it's been so fun. Like I'm 3 weeks, you know, 3 weeks into it. And so far everybody has responded. I've, you know, posted some stuff on LinkedIn about it. And I had a couple people comment, you know, this week saying, yeah, I'd love to get on the list. So I've booked some chats and it's really fun just to get on a call with people or go meet them in person or whatever. And just have a conversation. What's new with you? What's going on? What are you doing these days? And with no intention to get anything out of it. Like I'm really focused on that human connection piece this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Me too. that's the thing just for the listeners, because we were talking earlier about how fascinating I'm finding it to talk with so many people and understand their backstory and really getting to know people a little bit more, because nowadays it's like elevator pitch business card.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Yeah. No, I mean, I will say, like, when I used to go to networking events, I was thinking, what am I going to get out of this? And I recently had lunch with somebody who I've known for probably close to a decade. Mm-hmm. And he is what a lot of people would call like a master networker, but he never asks, what can you do for me? He is always asking, like, he just wants to get to know people. Like he's just asking, like, what's going on with you? Family, kids, pastimes, and career. It's not just, oh, can you send me a client?
Right.
And so like, I think as I'm having more of these conversations, I'm thinking about myself, like, what can I do to be a better person? So, you know, like listening to you talk about these conversations that you're having with these women on the podcast, I'm sure you're also thinking about, like, I had no idea. You're learning a little bit about yourself and the importance of connection and all of that matters.
Yeah. And really, like, without, I mean, back to what you were saying about self-development and leadership, communication is like the basis of all of it. It's actually kind of even the basis of our happiness, right? You could be satisfied in a vacuum. I don't know if you can be happy in a vacuum.
Well, I mean, it's ironic to say this, but like even I'm an introvert. So like I need time by myself. I'm fortunate. I'm also married to an introvert. So we're both the same, but like we need, you know, we need our alone time and we need to be independent. It's sort of, you know, it is what gives us energy, but then also it gives us the energy so that when we're with other people, you know, communicating and connecting, we can be fully present and we're ready and we're open for that.
Right. Just because you're an introvert doesn't mean you're a hermit.
That's right.
Yeah. 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 No, That's amazing. So how are you working with people now when you're working with clients?
Well, like, do you mean like, or most of my clients, like,
I mean, whatever you want it to mean.
Oh,
Christy.
You know, I work with people online. I work with them in person. My primary clients are people that are, I mean, I primarily coach women. We tend to carry a lot more emotional labor. We carry a lot of stuff with us. We carry stuff that maybe we shouldn't or don't have to.
Yeah.
I hate to say should. We should all over ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
You know, going through growth at a company, whether you're in a mid-level management role, you want to move up, or you're in an executive leadership role and you're struggling with burnout and your team is overwhelmed, you're overwhelmed. Those are the people I can coach through, because I've lived through significant growth. I helped to scale a company from small to mid-size, and then it was sold. And so I've done pre and post acquisition integration. And if you haven't lived through an acquisition, I mean, I know that acquisitions can go well, but you're blending cultures. You are retooling processes. You're trying to figure out where you fit and where your team fits. And it's so much uncertainty and it takes a toll on people. So I help people using my signature coaching framework that I spent a couple of years building. And that's what we do. It's just a very systematic process. It takes time. It's not like very simple. Like you said, it's not like reading a book and going through it. It's
right.
It's all the inner self-development.
Right.
How do people find the right coach for them?
I think you have to try people on. It's, you know, it's sort of like going into the dressing room and trying on different outfits. And until you try it on and look in the mirror, and it may take you a few tries. I was very fortunate and lucky. My last coach that I work with, I mean, I've worked with two primary coaches. One, I saw her on stage at a women's leadership conference probably a little more than 10 years ago. And she was up on stage and she was telling a story about herself. And I just thought, she's talking to me. And so I entered her online program and I got some coaching from her directly.
Mm-hmm.
My last coach was a referral and there was no intention. And I think she did a really good job. She said, hey, there's no expectation. We're going to meet for coffee. We're going to see if we're a fit. And that's it. You have to decide whether I'm the right fit. And she said, equally, I have to decide if you're the right kind of client for me.
Right.
And I remember when she walked into the restaurant and she looked the way I wanted to be perceived. She was very pulled together. She was professional. She was very elegant. She was very eloquent with her words, but she had this incredibly calming presence. And, you know, when I think about like fitness trainers and things people I've worked with over the years, a lot of people will tend to pick the trainer who might have some of the qualities they want to have in themselves, you know,
right.
A Pilates person versus a bodybuilder, say, for example. You know, it takes some trial and error. You might get lucky, but I think any coach should be giving a discovery call to have a conversation, to walk through what they do, what their fit is. And, you know, I have a network of coaches that I can refer people to, because if I'm not the right fit, I don't want to take somebody's money if I can't really help them. And that was my philosophy when I was, you know, when I was in sales and, you know, even as a sales leader. If we weren't the right fit for somebody, we would refer them to somebody else.
I mean, that's really the correct way to do things, right? Not that I want to make the sale, but literally I'm here offering you something that can help you. If you need it, I have it for you.
Right.
Same as coaching, right?
Well, there's millions of coaches.
Yeah, and, I know. I'm finding that out.
You know, somebody might need a more harsh demeanor. Somebody might need a softer person.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of stylistic differences in how people approach that. And I think you got to find the right person that has the skills and the credibility and also the style that you want to work with.
That's a lot. That's a lot to look at. So what would you say to somebody who was basically like they're in leadership, they're either feeling burnt out or just feeling like they're spinning their wheels and not getting the development or the effectiveness that they want? What would you say to that person? Like, would be a good, what would you say to them?
I would say, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it doesn't mean weakness. I think when you are, particularly you're a woman in a corporate role, you're trying to be strong for everybody, including yourself. And you can't be. You need an outlet. And if the higher you rise in the organization, the fewer confidants that you have to rely on within that ecosystem.
Yeah.
And a coach can give you that unbiased opinion. You know, I mean, they're still going to ask you questions because it is about you finding the answers for yourself and your team, because you know how that system works within the company and what boundaries you can push.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, you know, it doesn't hurt to go have a discovery call. It's just information. I think a lot of executives are thinking, you know, like I said, it's weakness to need help, but it's actually not. It would actually help. It can actually help you and the business push forward. And, you know, it can help you. Yeah.
That's like, it's like the flip side of the having the audacity of a middle-aged white man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. I mean, you have nothing to lose. And, you know, I would say over the last couple of years, for me in particular, when I'm talking to people and they say, well, I don't think I'm ready for this. And I'm like, well, you have nothing to lose by getting information. Go meet with somebody, get information. That's data that you can then make your next decision on. But if you don't even take the time to get this information to even see, like, how does that, is it helpful? Not sure. Even if you say, like, after meeting with somebody, like, hey, maybe I do want to work with a coach. It could be timing. There's lots of things. I mean, I struggle with carrying so many identities, caring for the home, making sure dinner is ready, you know, being a founder of a coaching business, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, awesome. Well, how can people get in touch with you and find you?
Well, my website. I do have a website, so anybody can go to ChristyDuvallCoaching.com. You can find me on Instagram at ChristyDuvallCoaching. I'm on LinkedIn, and that's the best way to find me.
Do you write a lot on LinkedIn? You mentioned that you had written some stuff.
You know, I used to write a newsletter on LinkedIn, but I've shifted away from that because I wanted to have a more deeper connection with those that subscribe to my newsletter. So I do have a weekly newsletter that goes out. It's not super long. It's very simple, just thoughts. You know, it's just a thought for the week that might inspire somebody. And then I write a blog on my website.
Nice. How can people sign up for that on your website?
Yeah, you can sign up for that. I have a couple of guides. So if you are a leader that's leading through change and you're trying to find your spark within, I've got the Spark Within guide that's really about, you know, the work you have to do to be the best leader. And then now at the same time, if you're leading an organization or a department through a big change, I also have a Light in the Storm guide because it's sort of the external work of what you need to do to be a great leader. And so those are both available on my website.
And do you have anything that's particularly for people who are in acquisitions? Because you did speak rather a lot about being in the middle of a company that was being acquired.
I think either of those two guys will help somebody, whether it's the external part as far as like leading for your team or it's the inner work. I think the best place to start for that is, where am I in this acquisition? How am I showing up for my team? Because like you said earlier, about every interaction with somebody is a communication, whether it's verbal or nonverbal. My body language at my desk while I'm sitting there and somebody walks by is a form of communication. So
yeah, you're sitting there and you're like, oh.
Yeah, nobody wants to come talk to you.
No. Yeah.
So I would say the Spark Within guide is probably the best place to start.
Fantastic. Well, it was so awesome to talk with you today, Christy.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Karen. This was great.
Yeah. Awesome. So look up Christy's website, go check out her Spark Within and Light, Leading Light, whatever it was called.
The Light in the Storm. You have to be the light in the storm for your team when it's hard.
The Light in the Storm. Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the interview. I wanted to let you know that we're launching a sister podcast and we'd love for you to be on it. It's called Second Wind Women Jumpstart, and it's a quick 15-minute deep dive for entrepreneurs who are just getting started or thinking about getting started and don't really know what they don't know and want to know where to go next. So be on the lookout for that.